All right, so we have a few minutes here, and so this is the part. I mean, I love this part, but this is the part I really like because I want to have a little bit of a dialogue, a discussion. You know, I'm really excited about that. And, you know, so I want to know, are there any questions or comments? What's going on in Boston? What's going on in Cambridge? My sister is here. Can you give her some love? My sister's here. She's studying in Cambridge, boy. From Fillmore to Cambridge. Anyway, so do we have any questions on anything I said, comments? Hopefully I have the answer. If I don't have the answer, I'm sure someone in the audience does. Any questions, comments? Yeah.
Thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
My kids will not be surprised I'm the first one to talk.
Like my mother.
When you were talking about strengths and weaknesses of our leaders, and you said that they succeeded in spite of their those negatives. Mm-hmm. And so, I think of it more like they succeeded, and we all have them.
Right.
Like it's that intense. Like it's
right. Right. But what happens sometimes, at least I speak from, you know, as an African-American right now, every culture has a different thing. But as an African-American, we are, and rightfully so, very protective of our leaders, you know, of the image of our leaders. And partly that's because as African-American, you know, there's a tradition in this country of kind of trying to make us look like fools. You know what I mean? And kind of tarnishing the image of our leaders. So we're very protective of the image of our leaders. But sometimes I think it's hard because we go the other way and we're like, you know, we put people on a pedestal, you know what I mean? And we make them these icons that are not human, as opposed to saying Dr. King, Rosa Parks were great human beings with their faults, they still achieved. You understand? So it's a delicate balance we have to ride. So, yeah, but I agree with you. We all have those imperfections. That's part of what makes us human. Anybody else?
Sorry. Who's first?
Okay. Thank you so much. Mr. Power, hey, I like saying that.
Mr. Power, keeps me going.
This is more of a personal question. Mm. Where do you draw your inspiration? Because you've traveled to so many different places, you're on a bus, you're seeing examples of ignorance and intolerance. I'm a fellow songwriter and I'm a little bit nervous, but how do you do it?
You know, in theater, we have to, when you write a play or you write a story, it's important to have empathy. So that means, you know, that if you're writing a piece, and let's say there's a villain in the piece, you have to have empathy. You have to say, okay, well, what is the perspective of that person? Even the piece I just did about Georgia with the African-American bus driver and the guy wanted to, you know, punch the rock, I had to be like, not agree with them, but have a empathy for that character. You know, what's going on in their head? What's happening with them? And I think through the arts, sometimes you can then have more empathy for other people. And I'm not always perfect at it, but when there's someone with a lot of drama or is doing some negative things, I try to separate the person from the deeds, you know? I was talking to Mr. Warren about, you know, South Boston and some of the challenges there of integrating South Boston and high school and stuff like that. And it's kind of like, I don't think there was any evil people involved in any of that. I just think there was some bad things done. And I think a lot of people were trying to protect their homes in the way they saw it. You know what I mean? It wasn't right the way it happened, but I don't think they were evil people. Does that make sense? And so I try to go with that situation as a beginning. And the other thing I think, and this gets back to art and music and theater, it fascinates me the power of art to bring different kinds of people together and how similar things are around the world when it comes to art. And especially I'll speak as hip-hop. It's crazy. Like there's people doing hip-hop in Turkmenistan, Kyrgyzstan, I mean everywhere. So that's like a real interesting global language we have, you know? I was in Tanzania a few years ago, and you guys know the Charleston, right? For the old people of Charleston, you know Charleston, you know that? Okay, so when we was coming up, it was the Kid and Play. Remember the Kid and Play? You know, so, but it's kind of just the Charleston in a way, you know, every generation we call it something different. Kid and Play, Charleston, Watusi, whatever, it just makes itself. So I was in Tanzania and these kids were on this playground, this real dusty playground, and we were talking and they started doing the Kid and Play. And I was like, you're doing the Kid and Play? And they're like, Kid and what? And they were doing, we started doing it together. It was a little, you know, variation we was doing. I was like, man, wow. I've never been to Tanzania. My ancestors are 400 years removed. We probably from West Africa, not East Africa, you know what I mean? And Europe and all the other ancestry, but we were doing this dance together. And so it was a common language and understanding. I don't think that music and art in itself can heal the world, but it can be that gateway for deeper dialogue, deeper discussion between people, and healing. You know, it can't be the only thing, but it can really open that up in profound ways. And we've seen that in history with rock and roll, you know what I mean? With disco, even though it's kind of cheesy, everyone, you know, dancing together, you know? With hip-hop, we see that. White kids from the suburbs, Mexican kids from the urban neighborhoods, being able to have their common language and dialogue and through this medium is very powerful, very profound. So just do the best I can. I'm not always successful. I do the best I can.
You've actually answered my question. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having
me. My original question was, what advice would you give our youths today? They're inundated with so much negativity, whether it's taking the tea to school or whether they're in school or whether they're watching something on the TV or even listening to people. So I'm wondering what advice you would give our young people to use their talents or their gifts to defeat the negativity that they're inundated with each day.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I kind of feel like, and like, you know, my man, we've talked about this before. I feel like there's good music today. There was good music back in the day. There's bad music today. There's bad music. I feel like there's cycles. But one thing I do notice that is different, I think that the youth of today, because of how many images they're just bombarded with, I think they're encouraged to be more consumers than producers. You know, and I do feel like that's a little bit different. And I don't think it's more violent now than it was, at least not when we were coming up in the 80s and 90s. I mean, I don't think it's more violent. I don't think it's more, all those things, I don't think it's more of. But I think that's something I'm concerned with, you know. When we were younger, it's like, go outside and play, you know. And we were in like a box, okay, let's take this stick. Let's pretend this stick is an airplane, you know what I mean? And you just did it. And now with all this and the amount of it, that does concern me. But what I would say is there's a lot of powerful benefits to technology, and I would try to encourage the young people to take the technology and utilize it for ways of empowerment. You know what I mean? So I'm not into like saying this technology is bad, but how do we utilize it as a vehicle for change? And let me give you an example. Again, back to the civil rights movement. My daddy said that one of them, which I didn't really realize, you know, they had voter registrations, they had different programs they were putting in the South, but one of the reasons why they would demonstrate, the purpose of the demonstration for the most part was to draw media attention. I didn't think about it. That was the main thing, because when you demonstrate, reporters come, television cameras come, you know, and then you can put your plight and broadcast your plight nationally and throughout the world. Well, today, I mean, it's still good to demonstrate in March, but youth don't necessarily have to do that because the technology exists. I mean, the other day I was watching Gangnam Style, you know that Gangnam? Gangnam! You know, Gangnam Style? Guessing that? 1,300,000,000 people have seen that. 1,300,000,000 people have seen Gangnam Style. That's like 1/5 of the whole world. You know? So the technology just, a person, a girl, a boy in their room can create something that has the potential to reach all over the world in a way that Dr. King and them didn't. They had to march. Not that you shouldn't, but they had to march. They had to do that, but you don't have to do that now. So I feel like, how can you utilize the technology? That's what I would encourage the young people, and to not be consumers, but take the technology and flip it to be producers and use it actively, you know? Use it actively. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for your question. Really good question. Anybody else? Questions, comments? Yes, ma'am.
Buenos dias.
Buenos dias.
Last night we had a conversation in my kitchen with my children and
Oh, this is
going to
be good. I already know it's going to be good. A conversation in the kitchen with my children? Go ahead, break it down. I'm hungry.
The power of listening. Mm. And from there we went to religion. And I know that Martin Luther King was a religious man. Mm. How important is religion for the civil rights movement?
For the civil rights movement, it was very important. The way my daddy told me, there was a couple of different factions. There was, I want to get these acronyms right, SCLC, right? Is that right? Someone help me out. That was Martin Luther King's organization. That was based in Christian faith. Then you had SNCC, which is what my daddy was a part of, and people like Stokely Carmichael and these people. And that was a little bit more of a political agenda. So I think that for some people it was more important than other people, but I think listening to all those people from the civil rights movement talk, I think spirituality was really important. Does that make sense? So that's religious, but you know, particularly today, you might consider yourself spiritual, but you might not consider yourself religious. You know what I mean? So I think it was really important, but I think even beyond that, to have a spiritual base, whether you call that religious base or whether you call it a cultural base, is really, really key for doing that kind of work. I mean, that kind of work was like life or death work. You know, I mean, my father has, he has cancer now, so he's struggling with it. I don't know how long he's gonna, you know, be around. But a couple of years ago, I sat down with him for a couple of sessions, and I recorded his story for like 4 hours. And I encourage everyone to do that with your parents and your grandparents. Not saying your family's going to die soon, but, you know, your grandparents, they might be getting in the 60s, 70s. Record those stories. It's really, really important. And some of the things he talked about, you know, just harm's way, like stuff they went through, is crazy. Like, he's like, you know, the sheriff, Jim Clark, you know, from Dallas County, Alabama, he hit me with the cattle prod. You know what I mean? It was just like, he's like, you got a mouth on you, boy. And I'd be like, yeah, you know, just, but they risked their lives. I mean, he has crazy stories. Like, him and Stokely Carmichael, they went into a post office, went into the white line only, and then a mob came, they had to jump in the cars. And I mean, crazy stuff. So you're risking your life, you know, you're risking your life. When I came up, it wasn't civil rights, but, you know, it was a different kind of struggle for me personally, because by that time I came up in the 80s. So it was kind of like, you know, my drama class was four blocks away, and I had to walk through the thick of the drug selling. You know what I mean? You know, and I don't, it was just like, it was kind of like, you know, but I really wanted to get to that drama class. You know what I mean? So we weren't risking our life in a civil rights way, but it was a different, it was high risk, because there were times where, like, a couple times shootouts happened. I was like, I had to run back in the theater and, you know, that kind of stuff. So there's always some kind of risk. Hopefully for the young people, it's not going to be so like life or death. But even if it's not life or death, it's still a risk. You're risking when you get out and perform. You know, you're risking your image. You're risking, it's scary. But I feel like a spiritual base, something that you believe in that goes beyond just logical reasoning is really important. Yeah. Did that answer your question? Y'all getting deep in the kitchen. All right, good. Any other questions or comments? How about the young people? Anybody? Oh, yeah, right here.
Well, one more. We have time for maybe one more, Ebbich? One more?
How about, can we do two? Because I see a young person.
Two? Okay, is that, two.
Is that okay? Okay, all right.
Okay.
You, and then we'll take you, sis. Yeah.
Thank you for coming this morning and sharing with us. My question is, with the same conversation, is the language that kids use now. The language that kids use now, and, you know, I notice now, since I get it, I interact with kids in all kinds of ways, how limited their language is based, you know, compared to the past generation where kids have more, I feel, a more expansive language to describe things and talk about other people without degrading them. Now when they talk about people, they're like, so-and-so, the lesbian, so-and-so, mm-hmm. the Hispanic. And, you know, I think that's, you know, I think that's very unfortunate for this generation now. Mm-hmm. And it's a struggle when I see anybody doing that. I could try to correct them all the time.
Right.
And creates a huge disagreement.
Right.
So I just wonder if you can talk about the importance of accepting people, but not, you know, getting to know people for who they are, not for what they do.
Right. Well, you know, bullying, internet bullying, I mean, it's a crazy world. You know, we probably have different experiences. I don't know, like, because I remember a lot of that going on when I was a kid, too. And so maybe it's different for every generation, but it was a lot of pain in school, you know what I mean? And particularly, it's black, you know, it's like, if you were light, you get teased, you were light. If you was dark, you get teased, you were dark. Anything, it's just like, it was a lot of that. So I don't know if it's more now, but I think, you know what I would say, this might not be good for everyone. I feel like, you know, if I'm working with a young person who's really into putting people down, you know, I would try to angle that into a positive way, you know? And this might sound silly, but stand-up comedy, you know what I mean? or a forum where you can do that in a more healthy way. You know, maybe it's within theater, because a lot of those people, some people are just mean and they're just doing that, but a lot of those people are mean, but their language is rich, and that's why they're so mean. That's why they can be so mean, because they can say it in a way, you look like a, you know what I mean? Like, wow, they're using metaphors and similes, you know what I mean? And they're brilliant, but they're using it in a negative way. So I would say how to angle that. Now, it's interesting when you talk about hip hop, you know, I feel like on some level, like my generation, we were more lyricists, you know, we were more lyricists. They got some music now that's pretty polyrhythmic, you know, like T.I. is like epic, you know, like Weezy is like, it's epic, but we had lyrics. But what's happening now is you have this whole split. So there's this whole genre of thing like the battle rap. You guys seen this? It's like this whole battle rap where they don't even have the music and they're real lyrical. Like, poetic, but the whole thing is to put each other down, but it's within a context, almost like how jazz musicians would battle each other. Or tap dancers would battle each other, you know? So it's still some of that kind of competitive aggression, but it's put within more of a healthy context. So that might not be for everybody, but for people who are like really good, what we used to call cappers, I would say, how do you angle that in a healthy way? So it's not just like you just around looking for someone to talk about. You know what I mean? And then it's also about building up the self-esteem of people. You know what I mean? So that if they receive that, because as you know, I mean, it's like when I look at my children, this world is so beautiful, but this world is also harsh, you know? Let's be honest, there's some harsh things. And so I feel like the more I can give them, the more they can hopefully be stronger as they go out into the world. Because I can't always be there holding their hand to protect them. I got to hold their hand on the inside and the way I help build their character. You understand? So, yeah, that's what I would say. Okay, last question now.
How did you avoid peer pressure when you were younger, especially with the drugs?
Well, quite honestly, no, I did avoid it. I did avoid it. That's not what I was going to say. Actually, no. That's a good question. There were a couple of things. One, you know, my mother was really proactive in putting me and my two sisters in things that she thought we could excel at. Like I said, like I was kind of a big mouth in school. I didn't necessarily cap and tease people like that, but I would always talk. So instead of like, you know, being shut up, she was like acting classes, you know? You know, and so she channeled it. So that was one thing. She always had me in doing theater stuff that also reflected the community, you know? So that was one thing. The second thing is I was able to find people in the community that was into the kind of things I was into. And that's what I also tell the young people, at a certain point, when you become a teenager, you know, let's say your friend, like when I became a teenager, I got to a certain point where some of my friends, we were starting to do different things, you know? Up until like 9 or 10, we all kind of the same. But the teenagers, it's like, and it's kind of unfortunate, you get on these tracks, okay? He's the jock, he's the scholar, he's that. And so some of my friends, I have love for them. I still have love for them. But we couldn't really hang out that much together because I was going to the drama class. They was going to go sell crack. I was like, all right, peace. You know what I mean? It's just, you know? It's not that I didn't love them anymore, but we didn't really have much to talk about at that point. So I think anytime I kind of started drifting away, I had my friends that also were MCs, that also were actors in the neighborhood. And that was what we did. We would go and battle other crews, again, like I said, in a healthy way, like, yo, hood is whack, and that's fact, you know, old school. Then they would talk about us. We would fight, but through words. So that helped. And then the other thing, just to be quite honest, is, you know, there's a lot of drug abuse in my family, with my father and my stepfather, with my mother, and a lot of the family community members. So again, I was born in the 70s, so I saw the tail end of the glory days of the 60s. But I also saw, like, revolutionaries, like, you know what I mean, just messed up. I mean, I didn't know Huey Newton, but, you know, he was on crack when he got killed. And I knew Huey Newton-like people across the water in San Francisco. So I think just seeing that, you know, my father that I told you about that was in the civil rights movement, like, he ended up, as he got to the 70s, not to get all depressing, but you asked me, you know, he ended up being on heroin. You know, I just remember walking with him, and, you know, we were walking. He'd be like, yeah, son, hold on a second. Bleh. All right, come on, boy. Anyway, like I said, when we get to, hold on. Bleh. And I was a kid, I was like, ugh, you know what I mean? I don't, whatever that is, I don't want to be like that. Not to, you know, diss him, I don't want to be like that. And I just saw a lot of that, you know, people cracked out. Or people like, you know, some girl that everybody thought, Janet's fine. Janet, ooh. And then a year later, Janet be like, dang, look at Janet. What happened to Janet, you know? You know, and I'm not trying to get grabbed, I'm just saying, you know what I mean? And so I saw that as a kid, and for whatever reason, I was just like, I don't want to go down that path, you know? I never tried those harder drugs, but I was like, it can't be as good as what that is. And it was just a lot of that stuff. So I think that just kind of kept me on the path, you know? And the way I feel like it is, I feel like some of those people that didn't make it, again, I speak for them, you know? You know, there's lots of my friends that didn't make it. You know, they got smoked or, you know, they didn't make it. But I feel like I speak for them. That's part of my job. So, not to depress us, but, you know. All right. Thank y'all so much. Thank you so much for having me.
All right.